It's time!
Happy New Month! The Eagle rises again! 29-0.
That's it! He's got the chance!
He did!
He's done it!
Listening to Pound for Pound, ringside for all things MMA and boxing on WFUV Sports.
Hello and welcome back to Pound for Pound, your home for all things combat sports. I'm your host, Andrew Canary, and I'm joined by Riley Lucas and Mahdi Dembele. We got Brian Raybax on the board, and I think we got a good episode in store for all our listeners out there. It's definitely been a while since we've had our last episode, but I don't think there could be a better time to come back than right now with UFC 287 right around the corner this Saturday. It features the highly anticipated rematch between Israel Adesanya and Alex Pereira for the middleweight championship and some other massive fights filling out the card. We're going to unpack all that action in just a little bit, but first, how are you guys doing?
I mean, I've had the rough day today, but that's good because I'm really amped up and I will hopefully put that energy towards this content right here.
You know, it's the last day before our little Easter break. What is it? 2 days? 3 days doesn't really do anything for me.
Yeah, the stress hits hard.
Yeah, and I work during it, but I'm always happy to be here with Andrew and Riley. So let's get it going, guys.
Yeah, no, I'm excited for it. And based on what we were hearing, it sounded like Riley was going to get in a fight of her own with her Uber driver. But that's besides the point. We're all here now.
I should be on the fight card this week.
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh, she's fighting for the belt.
All right. So we're just going to jump right into this UFC 287 preview. There were no fights last week, actually. So Everyone has been chomping at the bit to see this card start, and for good reason. The entire card is stacked from head to toe with amazing fights that I personally can't wait to see. Hopefully we could get your guys' opinion in just a second. But before we get into the main card, there's some fun fights in the prelims that I want to talk about. Coming off a first-round knockout that put the middleweight division on notice, Joe Pyfer is trying to extend his KO streak against UFC vet Gerald Meerschaert. It's going to be a tough ask for Pyfer, though, as Meerschaert is 10-7 in the UFC and 4-1 in his last five. I could see this panning out as a classic striker versus grappler matchup, but how do you guys see this panning out?
I mean, I see this panning out in Joe Pyfer's favor. Easy. I mean, he's, in my opinion, I believe he is the better striker. And Gerald Meerschaert, I mean, yeah, he's a dangerous jiu-jitsu guy. He has great takedowns. But overall, I think Joe Pyfer's really going to take this match.
So we're starting early, guys, I see. I'm rolling with Meerschaert with this one.
Really?
He's long tenured in the business. He's 35-15 record. When you're talking about the best submission fighters in the MMA, you think guys like Nate Diaz, you think guys like Damian Maya, Doe Bronx, Charles Oliveira. Mm-hmm. He's right there with them. The middleweight lives for the submission. He has, like you said, 10 UFC wins, and the only one that didn't come by submission was a TKO body kick of Errol Spence Lee in 2017. He's a guy that's going to smother you on the ground. I got to give it to him. He's just the vet in this situation.
Yeah, no, he definitely is the vet in this situation, but we've seen him get smoked in previous fights, especially against big name competition. I mean, I think everyone kind of remembers that Khamzat fight that happened a little while ago, which lasted probably about 20 seconds of him circling the cage and then unloading a massive right hand on Meerschaert.
Khamzat destroying everybody.
I know.
Well, here's my question for you.
Okay.
Since you're riding with him, This man has what? Like 50 professional fights under his belt,
yeah.
And his takedowns are at 37%. Like, that is just atrocious to hear. Like,
this is true. But I mean, like, when you're talking about a guy that has that many submissions, I believe it's 10, correct? Or is it not? It's 9.
Yeah.
It's 9 submissions over the last, like, few years. I gotta roll with him. He's just a vet. Nothing further than that. I think he has the experience.
I think Riley brings up a great point. I think there's something definitely to be desired in his takedown aggression, just success. But I think also to your point, Mahdi, that he's found a lot of success in finding grappling positions just through the fight randomly, whether it be like entering a clinch off of a failed takedown attempt and then getting those submissions later on.
Absolutely.
but it is interesting also to note that Meerschaert was actually, hold on, let me pull it up to make sure. essentially. Joe Pyfer's one loss dating back in the Dana White Contender Series, which is where a lot of up-and-coming guys get contracts into the UFC. He has his one loss in his past five fights against Dustin Stoltzfus. And there was an injury in that fight, kind of a weird ending, but a win's a win. And Gerald Meerschaert actually went out and beat Dustin Stoltzfus. It might have been a submission. I'm not too positive in that regard. But that being said, the one person that's beaten Joe Pyfer in the last five fights, Gerald Meerschaert has handily beaten.
Which adds a question mark. Again, a win is a win, no matter the circumstance. But that adds that obviously adds a question mark. You're thinking back to it, you're looking sideways at him. And yeah, that's why Meerschaert's the guy for me. I don't know.
That's fair. That's fair. I mean, I think
it is a good point. I'll give you that. But I just also think, I mean, with the arm injury that came about following that fight or during that fight, he managed to nurse it back to health so quickly, and he came back and knocked out two people.
It was a very fast
like
recovery.
That alone makes me think, like, all right, if this dude can bounce back that quick, knock two people out, I'm riding with him.
Fair point. That was fast.
No, that's definitely a great point. Mm-hmm. I think it honestly comes down to Meerschaert not getting caught early like he did in that Khamzat fight and working in those takedowns. And I think that he could possibly get the win. But I think it's Pyfer's fight to lose.
I think he could 100%. Like, guys, come on. Like, and it's not forced, his takedowns. It's not something like he's shooting at the legs, almost like a, I don't mean to call him out, but Khabib, you're awesome. But it's not like he's shooting at the legs. It comes naturally. It's more of like an organic takedown. He's working and grappling, and then he gets you to the ground, and then you just lose the fight from there. I like Meerschaert for this fight, honestly.
All right. We'll see how it pans out. Okay. But moving on to the feature prelim, we have Kelvin Gastelum taking on the Action Man, Chris Curtis. Listeners out there might know Gastelum for giving Adesanya probably his toughest test in the octagon until obviously he fought Alex Pereira, but Kelvin has been kind of on a bit of a downturn since that fight back in 2019. He didn't fight in 2022 and was 1-2 in 2021, dropping decisions to Jared Cannonier and Robert Whittaker. While those are some of the division's scariest guys by far, I felt like I personally didn't see the same Gastelum that I'm used to seeing, as in the, you know, Adesanya fight and even before then. That being said, though, he's still a dangerous guy with his wrestling base, especially for a guy in Chris Curtis that has had problems with stopping the takedown. So how do you guys think this fight's going to go? Do you think that Curtis is going to be able to stop the takedown, or what?
You're going to let me take this one. I mean, Chris Curtis is a huge puncher. I believe he's 17-1. That's his TKO record, and he's capable with both hands. I don't know if you guys saw the last fight, what he did to Joaquin Buckley, but Buckley just looked out of control, and it was the left hand. It wasn't even Curtis's right. It was the left hand that got him to the ground. Like you said, Gastelum is good. I know 2022, he didn't fight, and 2021 record, it's an aberration. You stole my thunder with the Israel Adesanya thing. I mean, that fight could have gone the other way. Like, I don't think people realize that. Maybe not the other way, but people were looking, Izzy, there's a chink in your arm.
It could have gone Gastelum's way with that head kick and a couple of those moments where he nearly dropped Adesanya.
Absolutely.
It looked pretty dangerous.
He put the first chink in Izzy's armor. I mean, and you saw him at the end. He was just holding up his arms. He thought he won. And As a guy watching that fight, I was like, you know what? If the decision went the other way, I wouldn't be mad at it. Kelvin Gastelum has a really good heart. He has a really good chin. And, it's an interesting fight. Honestly, I think this is his coming back story. I think Gastelum could take this, honestly.
God, we just don't agree on anything so far. We're
really?
Rough start,
I'm for the underdog. After the NCAA thing, I'm for the underdog now.
See, right now I am going Chris Curtis. Okay. And I want to know why I am Kelvin's biggest hater. I really am.
Wow.
Like, I'm going to come right
So where does this
say,
come
yeah,
from?
Yeah, tell
Explain
me more.
Yourself.
You know, I just think the dude's a bust. I really do. I want to like him so badly, but it really is hard for me to see because he has hands, he has wrestling talent, he has just like an iron chin. But I saw an analogy and it basically said that he is the type of guy who was just so naturally talented and athletic his whole life. Like, you know, those kids in high school are so good in high school sports, and then they get to college and they don't have the drive, they don't have the work ethic, and they just kind of choke. And I think if he just put a little more effort into just being great, he could be great. Like, he has all the talent. He's just not, he doesn't have like that drive, that final push. And I mean, 1-4 in his last five, like, come on.
Not great. Yeah. And actually, you're kind of hitting on something that I have personally seen. And I guess I kind of talked about a little bit where he hasn't been the same as he was in that Adesanya fight. It felt like he had a fire under his, you know, under his backside with that Adesanya fight. It looked like he came out with a mission.
Yeah.
And he looked great physically, technically, wrestling wise, like you name it, he was on it in that fight. And since then, I don't know if it's been like a morale thing since like he really felt like that was his time to win the belt. But it just seems like he's not fully in the fight, and that leads him to losing a lot of, like, you know, dumb decisions or just kind of taking a back step.
Who's to say that fire doesn't come back in this fight?
That's very
true. I mean, it easily could.
That's my whole point.
I just don't see it.
Really?
I don't see it.
I see it with Kelvin Gastelum. I've liked the fire. That was the one fight that I looked at him and I was like, you know what? And probably in the back of his mind, he was like, I should have been champion. The same way that Gilbert Burns against Kamaru Usman, we're going to get into Gilbert Burns later, where he lost that fight and he was balling because he thought he would have been champion. But I think Kelvin Gastelum could bounce back. I think he has something to prove. Didn't fight all 2021. And that was after a bad year, a losing record.
Mm-hmm.
I think he could take Chris Curtis, especially with his wrestling. I think if he gets him to the ground, then he has a chance.
I think he needs to win this. Truthfully don't think he will, but I think he needs to, because if he loses this one too, where does that leave?
Absolutely. But men are a different animal when they need to do something. When push
That's
comes
a good
to
point.
Yeah, when push comes to shove, you're going to see people at their best or either their worst, and yeah. I think we're going to get his best.
I agree with that point.
It'll be interesting to see what he does with his back against the wall, because I think if he loses this fight, I mean, I don't think any of us have the answer. Where would he go from here? Maybe another organization. I could see him being cut after this. I'm not too sure, but either way, though, I mean, Chris Curtis is
tough.
I think he's extremely underrated, honestly. Mm-hmm. He's 4-1 in his last five, the complete opposite of Kelvin. Yeah. And his only loss came when he took a fight on a week's notice before, and it was what, like across the world?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's pretty, I mean, a loss is a loss, but still, under those circumstances, it's pretty impressive.
Absolutely.
Yeah, especially, and I think you're talking about the Jack Hermanson loss there. And Jack Hermanson, he's a tough puzzle to solve, honestly. If you don't prepare for that guy for 12 weeks in a full fight camp, it can be really easy to just get caught. And actually, one of Kelvin's most recent losses was also to Jack Hermanson. And arguably, he had a worse performance than Chris Curtis did against him. He was, I believe, heel hooked within like 30 seconds, 40 seconds. It was quick versus Chris Curtis going the full distance with Jack Hermanson. So I think it's definitely something. It's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, just going off of skill, I do think Kelvin is the better fighter.
Yeah.
I do. Absolutely. I just think it's a matter of where we stand today. Everyone still has this picture of how he performed in the Izzy fight, and I just don't think he's that
I think
anymore.
I'm still holding on to that.
Yeah.
I'm going to continue to hold on to that. I mean, yeah, again, Chris Curtis is like a fantastic striker. He and it's both hands. It's not one. It's not this one. It's both hands. But I'm going to hold on to that nostalgia for Kelvin Gastelum. I think he could get it done, and I think I'll see him again.
Yeah, I'm rooting for Kelvin also.
I'm rooting for him.
Look at us, man. Yeah. It's me against you.
I will say, though, I'm a huge Chris Curtis fan.
I like him, too.
I've been watching him actually since the regional scene. And
oh, wow.
Yeah, I know. For a while. So, I don't know. Either way, this fight pans out, I think it's going to be interesting to see where both guys go from
Absolutely.
Here.
Absolutely.
But I think that'll do it for our preview of the prelims. But moving on to the main card, I think we got to talk at least a little bit about all the fights leading up to the main event, because they're all pretty amazing.
It's awesome.
Amazing.
Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah, it's so good. But opening up the main card, we have the youngest UFC fighter in history, Raul Rosas Jr., going up against Christian Rodriguez. I can see Madi's already very excited for this. I hate to say this, but everyone is watching for Rosas for this one, at least for me. I think Christian Rodriguez is kind of taking a backseat in this, at least all the promotion leading up to this. Can he get it done? How will he get it done? Will he look as dominant as he did last time for Rosas? These are all the questions that everyone is asking, not really too much on the side of Rodriguez. And hopefully we get the answer Saturday night. If he can do it, he'll keep his undefeated record, extending that to 8-0. And I think the sky's the limit for him after that point. I could see him being a major superstar, especially with being how young he is, also his ties to his heritage and everything like that.
Yeah.
But that brings us to the main question. Can he get it done?
Well, before I get into that, I actually want to ask you guys as well.
Okay.
Do we even think they were deserving of this main card slot? Because I read a lot of people angry with this fight.
Really?
You know, a lot of people were thinking that the Chris Curtis fight, Kelvin should have got this main card slot as opposed to, and I want to see how you guys think about that, because I personally think I would rather, like, I think this is more deserving of a main card slot.
Absolutely.
This is honestly one of the ones I'm most excited for.
I absolutely
not the one I'm most excited for, but it's up there.
I'm taking this fight over that other fight. Listen, let me just say first for Rodriguez, he's no slouch. He comes from the same camp as Mearshar, I believe, and he's really good on the ground. 4-0 in submission record, 3-0 in TKO record as well. He's a young guy. I believe he's only 25, I want to say, and he's going to be the first actual real test for Rosas. But when you got a guy like Raul Rosas Jr. coming into the ring, you know that's the fight to watch. When you think about the young, precocious prodigies that have come into the UFC, the first guy that you obviously think about is UFC GO, John Jones. Well, he's my GO, yeah. At least. I don't know how you guys feel about that.
PEDs
and all. Yeah. But John Jones is the first one that you think about. The youngest champion at, I believe, 23. He took the
23,
belt.
24, yeah.
23. Took it from Mauricio Rua in spectacular fashion. He looked unbeaten at the time. Nobody could really... He was what the industry called hot stuff.
Yeah.
Right? Raul, he has that same stench on him. He has that same smell on him. And whenever he's going to step in the ring, he is the main event. He's that guy. So
yeah,
I think this is the fight to watch, even over that Gastelum fight. Love Gastelum. Love Chris Curtis. But Raul Rojas is the fight to watch, and he's going to be the guy to take this win.
And see, honestly, I do agree with you there. We're agreeing for once. This is finally, here we go.
Okay.
But this is... Out of all the fights on this card, I think this is the one I have the least confidence in.
Really?
Win-wise. Because, you know, I think if Rosas can get the takedowns, he'll definitely win.
Absolutely.
But it's a matter of if he does that. Yeah. I think Christian Rodriguez, like you said, is the first, like, real test he's having. Obviously, a win is a win, and he has a great record. But this is the hardest opponent he's going to fight, and I think this is a real test if he's really all that.
Jay Perrin wasn't no slouch. Jay Perrin's a professional in this business. He's a veteran. Yeah.
No, he's a very good fighter.
And
I just think this
Rosas took him down. No problem. First round?
Yeah, first round. Yeah,
you see
first
that?
Round
finish, yeah. Christian Rodriguez, he's just such a sharp striker, though.
I think that's going to
be a very big problem for Rosas.
But I will say, though, Mahdi was saying this earlier, too. He's also no slouch on the ground, too. He has a lot of finishes through his groundwork. Mm-hmm. And also, he relies on it a lot through those fights. So the main thing that I'm worried about is it seems like Raul Rosas Jr., from what I've seen in striking videos and obviously this last fight in the UFC and the Dana White Contender Series fight, which actually a little fun fact, I don't know if you guys know about, he actually had to get parental approval to fight on Dana White Contender Series because he was still 17 years old.
18 years old.
That's
insane. Crazy.
I mean, either way, he's going down in history already. Like, there's no doubt about it. The kid is going to be a future star. But it's just a matter of the only issue I have for Rosas is I feel he has a slight issue just putting himself in harm's way for no reason. Or a little bit sloppy in that category. And with Christian Rodriguez being such a sharp striker and having, like, exceptional speed, I think it's a great matchup, though. I think this is going to be a very good watch.
Yeah, I think why we're all saying it's a great test is because of that reason. I mean, he's adept at striking, at grappling, at clinch work, you name it. He also has a good chin, too.
Good chin.
But the main thing that I'm worried about, at least for Rodriguez in trying to win this fight, is that he wants to engage in those grappling matches a little bit too early on, or those grappling exchanges, I should say. Because if he does, one, that takes completely away his striking ability, which I think is the main edge he has over Raul Rosas Jr.
That's his creme de la creme,
exactly. And that also opens up Rosas Jr.'s entire bag of tricks, you know, able to take it down to the ground, get a submission, something like that. So I'm just worried about his readiness to go to the takedown. Because we've seen in his past fights that he is open to go to that. But we'll see, though. I'm very interested to see what his game plan is going into this fight. But yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pulling Rosas Jr., but... We'll see what happens.
Yeah, young kid, 18 years old, into business. Youngest guy to ever get a win. I'm super excited for this kid, and I want to follow him throughout his entire journey in the UFC. He's awesome.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think we're all, I guess this is the one that we're all in agreement.
Yeah.
Rooting for Rosas
for the first
Jr.
time.
Let's enjoy this moment. Might not last much longer.
Yeah, take a quick break. But
the next segment. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Moving on. In the second fight on the main card, there's a welterweight matchup between one of the loudest members of the UFC roster going up against another vet of the division, Kevin Holland, better known as
Trailblazer.
Trailblazer. His actual nickname is Trailblazer. Dana White and a lot of people call him Big Mouth just for how vocal he is.
Yeah.
But he's meeting Santiago Ponzinibbio in the Octagon Saturday night. Well, definitely, I don't think it's going to be my pick for fight of the night. I think it'll be an interesting striking matchup between two guys trying to get some momentum in the rankings. Santiago is coming off a knockout win in his last fight, but Holland is 2-for-2 in his last four, with big losses coming to Wonderboy and Khamzat. Obviously, those are no slouches. I don't know if you guys saw those fights, but Holland got pretty smooth.
I saw the Wonderboy fight.
I saw the Khamzat fight. Did you?
That's
Khamzat. It was very short.
It's Khamzat. It's Khamzat. I'd rather death by Khamzat over death by.
That's how I felt. I'm like, the dude's a monster.
Yeah. Exactly. Like, there's not much that you can do for that, especially with, I don't know if you guys remember the whole where Khamzat missed weight and then the whole card got switched around.
Yeah, I'm never betting against a dude with the Dagestani roots. Those South Russians, I will never bet
against
them.
That whole Khabib camp, Islam, Khamzat.
Once you see the chin strap beard.
That's what I'm saying. Once I see them walk out there, I'm like, all right, take my money. Like, I'm putting all of it on you.
But I think it is a do or die situation for Holland. I mean, I think he definitely has some big pull from, you know, all the fans out there. I mean, people love him. I love him personally. I think he's a great fighter. And also, on the other side, he's a great talker, too. It makes his fight so exciting. But those are some big losses against Khamzat that can be like, you know, take it or leave it. Khamzat's obviously amazing. But Wonderboy, that should have been a winnable fight for him. It really should have. And the thing that he really lacked in was he didn't really work any grappling in whatsoever, or like really tried to figure out the, I guess I'm bringing back the whole puzzle analogy, the whole puzzle that is Wonderboy. He just kind of let himself get pieced up. And that was a bad fight for him. He took a lot of damage.
If I could take this one, Kevin Holland, Trailblazer. He's a personal favorite of mine, personal favorite of yours. And he's he's really a fan favorite, man. You're listening to his mic'd up commentary during the actual fight. It's the greatest thing ever. Everyone telling him to shut up and just fight. Dana's like, just focus on the fight. He's like, yes, sir, yes, sir. He's perfect. But on a serious note, he is coming off two big losses. And again, Khamzat Chimaev is just a different animal. I want to focus specifically on the Wonderboy fight. Wonderboy landed, I think it was in the fourth round, he landed some huge leg kicks to both the torso and the head. And you see immediately that Holland, he starts to wobble and he holds his hand. It comes out that he actually injured, I want to say it was a third, fourth, and the fifth metacarpal bones in his right hand in that loss. The injury was a result from the across that Holland landed on Thompson all the way back in round one, which was probably the only round that he won throughout the entire thing. This was a huge win for Thompson himself because he's 39 years old. He dropped two contests against Gilbert Burns and Bilal Muhammad. He said he felt like he was 25. He said he felt like he was young. You never want to hear that from a guy who's 40 years old.
Exactly.
I mean, Kevin Holland, you need this more than anything. I think this is really to save his time in the UFC, really.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm going to go off what you said earlier, and there's nothing more convincing than a man who has to prove something.
Yeah.
That's where he's going to get his drive, and I do think that he has a lot to prove in this matchup. He's going to prove himself. I'm rooting for him. And to go off what you said as well, I do think this is going to be the fight of the night. That's kind of how I see this going. Maybe I'm just anticipating this the most because they're both such characters in the ring.
Yeah.
You have Kevin Holland who talks, and then you have Santiago who like does backflips and runs and jumps. I just think it's going to be a really fun watch. But I do think that Kevin Holland is going to end up with a second round finish here. I'm really confident in him. I think he has a very lethal right hand, and I don't think Santiago is going to be able to survive that.
Santiago is a world-class striker now. He's world-class.
But I will say, though, I believe, let me look it up to make positive, but in his comeback fight, because he had to take a brief hiatus, either due to injury or something like that, but when he, when he fought Li Xiangling, he actually got knocked out in the first round.
He
got caught lacking through a pretty out there left hook, and then from there was just able to get
even so though Kevin Holland to me is known for, like, he's the type of guy that could take a shot and then instantly deliver an even harder one. I'm going Kevin Holland all the way here. I'm actually pretty confident in this one personally, which is crazy because the last ones, you know, all my picks I was a little like, hey, we could see. I do think Kevin Holland is gonna show
this
out.
Is the one you're confident in,
and
I could get beyond
not
that.
To mention, I mean, obviously, in the end, like, this isn't the most important factor, but he does beat him in reach by 10 inches.
Oh, wow.
And
okay.
I think that really that's going
to work
in his favor.
Yeah.
Fun fact.
I mean, we've definitely seen in situations where that wasn't important and, like, you know, the guy with the biggest size and the biggest reach, like, he ended up losing. But I think in this situation, with his powerful right hand and that extra 10-inch reach, that's going to, like,
his kung fu will come out. I give him
Going off the back of that, I can see Ponzinibbio pulling out a lot of leg kicks on this fight then because... If he's really relying on that boxing stance, Holland, then that's going to leave that lead leg wide open. But since Ponzinibbio getting finished back in like 2021, he's been on a pretty good run. I do want to be the one, I guess, naysayer. I think Ponzinibbio can get it done. But I think you bring up a great point, fair. Riley, and the power of Holland. If he does land cleanly on Santiago, I think it's going to be lights out for him.
Now, I think, though, if Santiago, if he like looks to chop like Holland's calf and just really get through his midsection, then I think it's a different story. But I just don't think we're even.
He's going to go at the stance. He's going to go at that wide stance. He's going to. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. But moving on up. You got any last
listen, Kevin Holland, if you're listening to me, I love you. We all love you.
Yeah, we're rooting for you. Don't let us down.
The one naysayer here is also pulling for you. Just get it done.
I know. Like, I'm a huge fan
We love him. We love him.
We know deep down in his heart.
We're pulling for you.
Yeah, well, hopefully we talk about his massive win next week. We'll see how the pans out. But moving on up the main card. Here we have, actually, you brought up your pick for Fight of Night. Here's my sleeper pick for Fight of Night, with Adrian Yanez taking on Rob Font in the bantamweight division. I think the bantamweight division, at least for me personally, has been my favorite division in the past couple of years, with Jan, Sterling, O'Malley in the mix, doing their thing. But it's also been a lot due to these rising stars. I've watched Yanez since his contract fight with Dana White Contender Series. And it's been awesome watching him develop and get better with each fight. I believe he's 5-0 in the UFC right now. Pretty much all of them coming by finishes or decisions through great, fantastic fights. But he's going up against a real tough test in Rob Font, who has fantastic boxing.
Fantastic.
His face definitely does look a little bit like Plato after each one of his fights when he gets pieced up a little bit.
Marlon Vera.
But, yeah, exactly. That's the fight that I'm that pulling was... out. But despite that, though, he's a really, really good fighter. Also, he's got some surprisingly good grappling, too. But Yanez also has pretty surprisingly good grappling, too. And off that, I've seen some great ground and pound by him. So how do you guys think this fight's going to pan out? And do you think it's going to be as good as I'm previewing it as?
I mean, I'm excited for really this whole fight card. I'm excited for, like, when I say the last one, that's the one I'm looking forward to. I'm really like, that one's like a 200% like hype. And then these are like 100% hype for me. I'm very excited for all these. I'm pulling for Rob Font on this one.
Okay.
I mean, I just think that he's a nasty boxer. He has crisp hands. He's fast. I just think that he's going to show out here. And I really like fighters personally that sit behind the jab. And I think he has that on lock. I really think that he's going to show
out. He has one of the best jabs in the entirety of the UFC, not just the bantamweight division.
And
that jab is, like,
I really
beautiful.
Think that's going to carry him through this fight. And I think that's the most important thing here for him.
This is definitely going to be a fun one at bantamweight. Rob Font, though he got sent to the mat by Marlon Vera, he looked good even in that round three. The round that he got knocked out in, I mean, he caught the leg kick. He was driving him back, and then he almost connected with his head. He's a very explosive hitter. I believe his record is 8-0, his TKO record. He's a striker in every sense of the word. Prior to this, Font only lost to Jose Aldo, which was a unanimous decision. And his last win came against Cody Garbrandt all the way back in 2021. So he's fighting for something. I'm going to have to go with Yanez. When you talk about boxing, I mean, damn, you're talking about boxing. I want to say he's undefeated in the UFC. I may be wrong. He completely demoralized Tony Kelly with an incredible KO in the first. He absolutely destroyed the defense of Kelly. I believe it was a left hook that acted as the catalyst to start that. It was a left hook and then just destroyed the torso. He has a streak of 5 wins that I assume that he wants to keep. Mm-hmm. I think he's going to take it against Rob Font. Rob Font's a great fighter. Again, one of the best jabs. I mean, I'm a boxing guy. I started before this the UFC stuff. I was a boxing guy. I tell you, his jab is just something to watch.
Yeah, I mean, Yanez is on. I mean, if you combined his UFC record with the one before he actually got into UFC, he's on a 9-fight win streak. So he's riding that momentum very, very high. But also, to that same extent, we've never really seen him face any serious adversity in the UFC. I mean, he's had a couple tough fights, especially the one against Randy Costa. That was a very tough fight for him. But nothing to the point where he's fighting a guy like Rob Font, who is, I mean, his only 2 losses at bantamweight. Rafael Assuncao, who's kind of taken a downturn in recent years. But the most recent ones were Jose Aldo, who's considered probably one of the best mixed martial artists on the planet, best featherweight of all time, at least I think. Mm-hmm. Bantamweight, arguably even better.
Yeah.
And then Marlon Vera, who, I mean, he had his own loss against Sandhagen a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
But that was just a bad matchup for Rob Font, if I'm being quite honest. So I'm really interested to see how Yanez deals with that boxing pressure from Font. I don't know if he can hold up to it.
I think, though, Yanez does have an amazing counter jab as well. So I think that's why it's going to be such a great matchup. But at the end of the day, if he can really get a hold on Rob Font's jabs, then I would like to say I think he has it in the bag. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you know, when you think you have Rob Font's jabs figured out, then he hits you with some vicious kick and then it's...
And then game over.
You know, I'm really pulling for Rob Font on this one. Who is the underdog, by the way, in this fight?
Let me check real quick.
I'm curious to see.
I actually think it's Giannis. Let me check. I may be wrong as well.
Because this is one I just can't figure out who it would be off the top of my head.
Yeah, it seems like such a close fight, which is it's crazy considering close. That Rob Font has been, I mean, he's fought guys like Jose Aldo and Chito Vera, like guys at the top of the division, and we only see Giannis starting to get that top of the division. But yeah, let me just make.
I mean, regardless of who's the underdog and who's the favorite, I wouldn't be mad at it. Again, it's super close.
Yeah, very close.
Both guys have great boxing.
Okay, so actually, Giannis is the slight favorite. He's minus -180.
Slight favorite.
Oh, okay.
Rob Font is plus +155. At least
all right, look at me going for the underdog.
Okay.
Yeah.
Switching it up.
There you go. But yeah, I'm really interested to see how this pans out. And also, I think it's going to be fun tonight. You know, if I'm wrong,
listen,
you guys can come on here next week.
I wouldn't be mad at you. I mean, this entire card is amazing. Little anecdote for you. My first ever UFC event that I watched start to finish was just 225. That was Alvarez McGregor, that entire card. Wonderboy T-Wood. Yeah. You had Frankie Edgar. You had Chris Weidman. That was a ridiculous card. And now that I actually spend time to watch entire cards, I think this is one of the better ones we had in a couple of years, just overall.
Agreed, completely.
No, 100%. But moving on to the co-main event, we have Jorge Masvidal, Gamebred, taking on Gilbert Durinho Burns.
It's amazing.
I know, it's a fantastic fight. A little bit of a preface to this fight, though. Masvidal, in the media meetings that he had during this week, he says that if he doesn't come out of this fight with his hand raised, he's going to retire if he loses this fight. I just want you guys to answer right now. Do you believe him?
Do you
think he's going to retire? Do you think...
Malarkey.
You know, you don't think he is?
No.
I think, you know, normally I would say no, but because this fight is taking place in his hometown, I think it kind of sets him up for the perfect place and the perfect opportunity to retire if he does want to.
I mean, last time he faced Kamaru Usman, 261, it was also in Miami. You got knocked out then. You want to retire then? I don't think it's in Jorge Masvidal's. I don't think that's in his... I don't think that's in his nature.
I do think he's losing this fight, though.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think he's losing this fight.
We're going to get into... I think Gilbert Burns has champion written all over him. Again, I spoke to it earlier. When he lost to Kamaru Usman, he genuinely felt like it was his time. Mm-hmm. I still think he has that hunger. His fire has never went away. Let's be clear about that. But Jorge Masvidal, I mean, I don't think it's in his nature. Me and Andrew were talking about this. Whether it was another promotion or the more likelier option, he was going to go back to bare knuckle fighting. I think that's his option. I don't think he's done with fighting. Maybe out of the UFC.
Okay.
I don't think he's done with fighting.
I could see that.
If anything, I think he, like what Mahdi's saying, I think he might exit the UFC if he loses this. Honestly, I wouldn't be too surprised if he stuck around for another payday.
Yeah.
He seems like the type of guy that would kind of do it. No disrespect, even though it kind of made it seem like that was a little disrespectful. Either way, though.
I'll be honest.
There's something in the waters of Miami. He just has that grit to him. That's how the guy came up. He came up street fighting.
With Kimbo Slice.
Yes. Man. Kimbo Slice was his idol. You know, he's rough around the edges. They call him Street Jesus. They call him Game Bread for a reason. He's tough. He's in the mud. I don't think it's just in his nature to just like, all right, I'm walking away. Over 50 fights, 50 fights in his career, I think he's going to be here to stay. I think he's one of those characters.
Yeah, I think he'll definitely stay or go to like a celebrity boxing type thing.
Yeah.
I could see that happening, but I just think at this point, if he talked all that about retiring, I just think that would be so embarrassing for him to just be like, never mind. Like, it's almost like you have to.
True.
Maybe one of those situations where you retire for like a year and then all of a sudden he's like a Tom Brady
back.
Type.
Yes, he's gonna want back. I still think he wants a piece of Masvidal.
Yeah.
I think Masvidal still wants a piece of Covington again.
Yeah.
I think I don't think he's done. I don't.
I mean, he kind of blew that though, to be honest, that first time around, the whole Masvidal versus Covington one. I mean, like, he had his chance there just totally blew it. But how do you guys like this? I mean, I don't know if you guys saw the news that Darren Till.
Don't talk to me about that guy.
Why are you upset about it?
Darren Till is Conor McGregor. Personally, me, hot take. I don't know if this is a hot take. I think Conor McGregor is overrated. I do slightly. Yes. I think Conor McGregor is. He's a superstar in everywhere. He's box office. He brings in a large Irish crowd with him. He's entertaining to watch. I think his rise to stardom has been slightly overrated. That's a conversation for a different
day. But I fully agree. I think his personality really carried him.
Yes.
But I think that's what makes him a little overrated.
Massive guy for the division. And Darren Till mirrors him. Darren Till was the next Conor McGregor. Yeah. Loudmouth, massive for the division. Mm-hmm. And then what happened? Lost like...
He couldn't back it up. Couldn't back it up. But how do you guys like this? Darren Till said he wants to leave the UFC. Actually, they granted him his release, so he's out of the UFC officially now. And what he says he wants to do is get into the boxing scene, whether it be celebrity boxing, legitimate boxing. If Masvidal ends up losing this fight and leaves the UFC, I could see a rematch between Darren Till and Masvidal. I don't know if you guys have seen their first fight, but that was the thing that really started Masvidal's kind of momentum and hype train. Because that was the same night that the whole three-piece in a soda thing happened with Leon Edwards. which is still hilarious.
Oh, my God.
But I could see that being something in the future. But
realistic option.
I think we're getting a little too ahead of ourselves here, at least I am. So bringing it back to this fight, I mean, I guess we kind of already gave away our answer there, but who do you think wins? I mean, personally for me, I can't see, unless if Masvidal goes out there and has a Ben Askren-esque performance where it just looks like he's a different type of animal and just blitzes him, man, just to catch him cold.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think Burns wins this fight no matter where he takes it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, agreed. I always worry a little bit when the hometown person is fighting in their hometown because you always think that gives them a little boost of momentum.
Both hometown. I'm sorry to interrupt you. Both hometown.
Oh, I did not
know. Both from South Florida.
Yeah.
Oh,
Burns originally
never mind.
From Brazil, but fights mainly out of Florida.
Okay, but still, either way, I had a little bit of a worry there because I'm like, they always pull out in their hometown. You know, it's just how it is. It's just that superhero story everyone wants to see. But at the end of the day, I think if Gilbert Burns can take on Wonderboy, he can easily take on Masvidal.
Let's be very, very clear. Gilbert Burns wanted this Masvidal fight. I don't know if you guys saw the interview, but he spoke very kindly of Masvidal. He respects him. He said he's a big name in the division, and he's a guy that Burns respects. They're both fighting out of South Florida, but everybody knows that Masvidal has, he has a home crowd.
He has
them wrapped around his finger. He is Miami. You wanted to get to a question here. How big of a fact? No, I'm reading this wrong. You said wants to steal. Yeah, you want to get into that? And I'll give you an answer.
Sure. Of course. So Gilbert also came out in this media week and said that he wants to steal Colby Covington's title shot with a big win against Masvidal because Dana White previously came out and said Colby is the next guy for Leon Edwards in the fallout of Leon Edwards versus Kamaru Usman 3, which Leon Edwards successfully defended his belt. And now Colby Covington supposedly is next in line. Gilbert says, I think I can steal that title shot with a huge performance and a huge win over Masvidal, who is a big pull in the audience. What do you guys think? Do you think that it's even possible for him to steal that title shot?
Let me tell you something. If Gilbert Burns is able to steal that Miami crowd, I think Dana may pull some strings. Dana's a guy that goes with the flows. You know, he's that one manager. Because what Dana has managed to do, different from boxing, is he's the sole manager, and he gives us the fights that he wants.
He loves pleasing the people.
He's a people pleaser. He's a man of the people. If Gilbert Burns is able to turn that crowd against Masvidal, and it will be the loudest silence you ever heard, he might give that spot, or it might be something, I don't know, maybe I'm thinking too far, maybe a Covington Burns thing, and then that guy goes on to fight for the belt, maybe. Mm-hmm. But something will happen. If Burns is able to do something incredible, something will happen.
There will be tectonic. I would love a Covington Burns matchup because I think the main thing that people are having a problem with is that Covington hasn't fought recently enough.
Yeah.
And he hasn't amassed a record over top ranking guys to really warrant that title shot. Mm-hmm. Riley, what do you think, though?
I think 100%. I mean, I just think, even if he just has a good performance in this matchup, I think he's very deserving of going for it. I really do. I think he's showed us that he is in the position where he should be, at least a contender. I just think it's an easy win for him, in my opinion. I think that if Jorge Masvidal wins this, the world would go absolutely crazy. I mean, he has been talked about recently trending in the wrong direction, so he really needs this. But I think if Gilbert Burns pulls this off, he 1,000% deserves a shot with Colby Covington.
Got you. I mean, and that's the thing I love about the UFC so much is that there's so much talk and there's so much buildup, and I see that in other fights also.
Yeah.
But this is the one sport, or one of the only sports, that you put it all on the line, and basically what you do in that octagon directly gets you what you want or it sends you 10 steps back.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I think either way, we're going to see some fireworks in this co-main event.
And absolutely. I mean, Gilbert Burns in general is just such a well-rounded fighter. He really is just a well-rounded dude. And I loved how early on he was getting a lot of submission finishes. And then it's almost as if he fell in love with knocking people out. And he's really switched it up.
Same thing with Kamaru Usman. It was the same exact thing. He was a guy that started out wrestling. Then he learned his submission holds. And he stood up and he's knocking out Masvidal. But here's the thing about Masvidal. I don't think... It's not just about, it's about who you fight. I'll give him credit. I don't think the guy's washed. I really think he has some in the tank. His last three fights were Covington and Usman. Usman looks like the greatest welterweight ever. Sorry, Tyron Woodley. I'm sorry.
And I think that's not a hot take anymore. Yeah, I can say that. Especially if Jake Paul.
That's what I was about to say.
Okay. Sorry, Tyron. And Colby Covington is the number one contender. So, I mean, like, you know, he's had a bunch of fights in his career and he's losing to the top guys. I don't really see a drop off there. Like, it's almost like we expected those guys to win. I picked Kamaru and Colby to beat him. I don't think he's taking a step back. I think he's going to give Gilbert a good show. But I think, if Gilbert's able to take this crowd away, then it's going to be something amazing. Yeah. And,
yeah, I mean, I think the stage is definitely set for both of these guys, too.
We have a lot to look forward to. I'm
so excited. I can't wait. And then, speaking of excitement also, though, now we're moving on to the main event. Here Alex Pereira, in his first title defense, defending against Israel Adesanya, the guy who he, I mean, pretty much has a lifelong hatred for, and also beat him to actually claim that middleweight championship belt in the first place. Israel Adesanya is trying to reclaim what he lost. And also, it seems kind of like a redemption story for Adesanya, or at least he wants to make it a redemption story. He's 0-3 against Pereira in kickboxing and UFC combined records. The last two of those fights, the most recent, he both got knocked out in, whether it be TKO, KO. The first one he ended up losing on points. I got a couple questions for you guys, but at first I just want to kind of get your mindset going into this fight. I mean, are we gonna
disagree again? I think we might. I'm scared.
I don't listen. I think it's looking like it might be.
I feel like the tension brewing.
I know. They say it's Pereira Adesanya 2. It's really Pereira Adesanya 4. Like 4.
Yeah.
That we talked about. And Adesanya's 0-3. It's just one of those things. I don't know, because it's two big guys and. Izzy's great. Like, just his rise to stardom, it has been amazing. But ever since he's claimed the belt, I think his title defenses and his fights have gotten more and more, I don't want to say boring, but you see...
Like, lackadaisical.
Yeah. You kind of saw it that, you know, this guy could get dethroned. I don't think he's, like, as invincible and his run won't last long, especially, like, a guy like Pereira. Pereira just owns this guy, and he looks so much bigger than him. Mm-hmm. Like, both are listed at 6'4", but Pereira looks like...
Looks like a real 6'4".
Like, like a real 6'4". And you feel his 6'4". You don't feel Izzy 6'4". I don't know. You guys want to jump in this? It's like, I don't know. My mind is racing every time.
I mean, listen. I think Izzy is definitely the better technical striker. But I think the problem is he has a lot of weakness with his stance. He has a lot of weakness with position. And I think Alex's power just might be too much for him. I really do. And I'm actually surprised that Izzy is the betting favorite. I think maybe it's because they think it's going to be his comeback time. He wants his belt back. He has that fire inside. But I just think that Alex, in my opinion, is one of the scariest dudes out there.
Oh, my God. He's a serial killer.
No, and he has that also that slight accuracy advantage. And I think that's going to come in handy. That left hook. I mean, I get scared when I watch
that left hook. I see in my nightmares. Exactly. Night, honestly, it's so
that
scary.
That left hook reminds me of Roy Jones.
It reminds
me of Roy Jones.
Yeah. It's terrifying. I mean, talk about show stopping power. I think he could hit some heavyweights and put him out.
Yeah. Oh, 1,000%. But what's even scarier to me is not only is the left hook so lethal, it's that he has such composure the whole time.
Yeah.
Like he's just there, like.
Stone face killer.
And I really think that his power, the left hook, and his accuracy is going to come over on Izzy.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely can see that. I mean, I think that we've seen how this fight plays out three times before in purely striking. And while we've seen a little bit of grappling in their last matchup, and Adesanya was able to steal a couple rounds in their last fight, I think it goes back to what you're saying, Riley. Mm-hmm. It's just... Pereira is too accurate and he's too powerful for Adesanya. Essentially, with the style that Adesanya has, he has to be perfect for 25 minutes to not lose. Pereira needs to only be perfect for about 5 seconds, you know, and then he wins 100%. The fight. But that actually kind of relates to my other question. do you think that Adesanya is going to come out different stylistically? Do you think, I mean, I think it would be too far-fetched to say that he's going to come out and have a completely different style. I think we're going to see the classic Adesanya kickboxing style, yeah, really measuring people with leg kicks, using that distance and that blinding jab. But do you think that he might work some more grappling into this?
Like you said before, the first fight you saw, Izzy take some rounds because of the grappling. I think Izzy's going to capitalize on that. I think he's going to have to go back to the grappling. Mm-hmm. Grappling usually translates into the ground game. We don't know how Izzy looks on the ground. Izzy's a guy that he works standing up. He's a kickboxer. He's gonna beat up your legs. He's going to beat up your torso. And then he's going to catch you with a good one. And that's the problem with a lot of stand-up guys. You want to talk about Conor McGregor, who I said is slightly overrated. Conor McGregor is only built for like two rounds. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I feel the same way about Izzy. Izzy never rocked my world when he became a UFC champion. I knew at some point he was probably going to fall. And the guy being Pereira, to take it from him, it's not that big of a surprise. I think you're going to see pretty much the same style from Izzy and pretty much the same result. I got to go Pereira on this one.
Wow, look at us, guys. This is crazy.
Hold on.
We're
I might not be.
It's a podcast that thrives off of debate, but there's no debate here.
I know. I know a lot of weight on
his confidence. Let me just say,
I will say
his confidence, though. What I appreciate about Izzy is the confidence. You know, he takes the losses on the chin. He comes out in a big mink coat, yeah, and he says stone cold, yeah, I believe I could beat this guy, yeah. But I don't think Pereira, sometimes guys just have your number.
And even coming off the last fight, there was so many people that just kept saying that Izzy dominated the whole time. Obviously Alex won, but everyone was tweeting Izzy was dominating the whole time, that's why he's the favorite in this fight. Mm-hmm. And I just don't see that. Like, I don't know if we all watched the same fight, but I will say
the one thing that I did see was at the end of the first round. I don't know if you guys remember, Pereira again rocked at the end of it, where he was a little bit wobbly, mm-hmm, after it, but yeah, it was crazy. Literally at the beginning of the second round, it seemed like he was just back to business as usual. He's, mm-hmm, completely fine.
He ate it.
He just straight up ate it. So yeah,
I think Izzy likes to back away when it's, mm-hmm, getting hot. And yeah, I think that's what I saw during that fight. So for everyone to say like, oh, that last fight, Izzy controlled it, Alex just won in the end, mm-hmm, I don't agree with that.
Yeah, and I will say Adesanya has come out this week and said, I want to be more aggressive. I need to find more, mm-hmm, moments like that into, yeah, that first round. But I think, like what Mahdi was saying, sometimes some dudes just have your number. Like we saw it with Holloway, yeah, and Volkanovski.
Yeah.
I mean, mm-hmm, as much as I love Holloway, he's literally my top three favorite.
It is what it is.
I mean, he just cannot win against Volkanovski. Say what you will about that second fight, but the first and, mm-hmm, third was as emphatic as you can get. So I don't know. It's going to be really interesting to see what Adesanya does, if he changes anything up on Saturday, mm-hmm, night. And I think, honestly, he needs to if he wants to even have a shot at winning this fight.
I agree completely.
Absolutely. This, yeah, is going to be one for the books.
I mean, my heart honestly says Izzy, but my mind says Alex. And I got to go with my mind on
you
this.
You got to go. Yeah.
All right. So we got Alex.
Alex. It hurts me to say.
I mean, I hate to say it also. Prayer too, man.
Because Izzy's just so much fun.
Finally agreed.
We agree, but we know what's in our hearts.
It's going to be a great matchup.
Izzy's just so much fun.
How do you guys think it's going to end, though?
If Prayer wins, I think it's going to end in a finish. Prayer wins.
Mm-hmm.
I think
finish.
And I mean, I guess the only way that would be a finish is TKO KO, because I don't think my man's pulling out a rear naked choke or triangle anytime soon. But Adesanya, man, let me say this. I think the way this fight pans out, there's going to be a finish either way.
Mm-hmm.
I think these guys hate each other so much. I think Adesanya...
Respect. Izzy spoke
That's
about
the
it.
Best fight they shook watch,
each
though.
They said they don't like each other, but they respect each other tremendously.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, still though, they
That's
they definitely
hate each other. It really does. When you have that fire inside you and you're like, I hate this dude, you want to knock him out extra, that's when it's a fun watch. It really is. I mean,
yeah. So I think Pereira's definitely got that, and Adesanya, based on what he's been saying this week, definitely has that also now. So it'll be interesting to see.
Truly.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I guess we all got Pereira. But moving on, that's going to be an amazing card. Make sure you tune in for that one. I do want to preview a little bit for next week's fight night. Speaking of Max Holloway, he's going to be going up against Arnold Allen in what should be a fantastic fight. Arnold Allen has been making a tear through the featherweight division. I think most recently stopping, I believe it was Dan Hooker, if I'm remembering correctly, back in 2022. Actually, my bad. He also finished Calvin Kattar, who Holloway had a very famous performance against him. I don't know if you guys remember. I'm the best boxer in the UFC. That was his whole fight against Calvin Kattar. Even then, that fight went the full five rounds. Arnold Allen was managed to finish him in under two rounds.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So off the back of that, I do want to save a lot of this preview for next week because it will be definitely fun to get into. But it should be a fun striking matchup. And you guys have any very early predictions?
I mean, like you said, I want to wait kind of till next week to really dig deep into this. Mm-hmm. But overall, I don't think it's over for Max. Yeah. I don't either.
I know Arnold Allen, he's very formidable. He's like a bruiser. He comes straight forward. Kind of reminds me of like Michael Chandler a little bit. Comes straight forward. Mm-hmm. He's trying to knock your head off. I love Max Holloway. It is what it is, yeah, man. Mm-hmm. Max Holloway is just my guy. He's a character. And he has, I believe he has the height advantage by 3 inches. Mm-hmm. I think, and I also believe the reach advantage. So I think he'll use that to his advantage.
Yeah, and we'll see.
Yeah.
He's definitely worked in some grappling, but I mean, to that same extent, Arnold Allen, man, he's that guy too.
He is.
So
he's
gonna be another great fight.
Yeah, man. I know.
Hush.
UFC is so stacked this month. But one last thing before we wrap up, it is very important to mention the UFC parent company, Endeavor, which owns UFC, I think dating back a couple years now. Mm-hmm. They bought the company for around $4 billion. They are also now buying the WWE, which has been shopping around for a while. They finally find a home with Endeavor, and it comes out that they are going to be merging the UFC and WWE merging it together, put it on the stock market, and it's going to be its own company now. So, I mean, we're going to have to see as this news develops in the coming weeks and coming months and see, like, what actually does this mean for the UFC and WWE? Obviously, I care much more about the UFC.
Yes, of course.
But quick thoughts. What do you guys think?
You know, I have mixed feelings because I do have concern. I think that we're going to now have a lot of WWE shoved down our throats, which is not going to be, you know, there's kind of a big divide between the UFC. You got real fighting and then you have the fake fighting. We all know it.
Yeah,
and I think people aren't going to be happy if we start getting, or UFC fans, I mean, they don't want to have the fake WWE shoved down their throat. I think the biggest WWE haters are UFC fans, people who appreciate real fighting. Mm-hmm. So I am a little concerned about that. But then I also have, you know, some positive remarks because we see what Endeavor did for the UFC. I mean, the revenue grew by more than 1.5 times since 2017. So financially, I think it's a great move. I think to now acquire. Yeah, exactly.
You hit the nail on the head. This has been a big thing. Fighter pay. We were talking about me and Andrew. Mm-hmm. We were talking about this. Riley, you bring up a fantastic point. The main argument to get to Dana White, he's a man of the people. He's a sole manager. He makes the fights that people want to see. However, people are saying that he's controlled labor costs at the top end. So while there's a huge middle class, everybody's eating, nobody's broke.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody's making Floyd Mayweather money if your name is not Conor McGregor, right?
Yeah.
So I think that added revenue is going to get these guys exactly what they're paid for. I think it's good for combat sports in general.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think you take the good with the bad. Yeah, we're going to get WWE shoved down our throats.
We'll get a little annoyed every now and then.
Yeah, but WWE is a huge company in itself.
Listen,
they got
a
lot of fans.
I'm a secret WWE
fan. Yeah.
Everyone went through a WWE phase in middle school. If you say you
absolutely.
Didn't, you're
lying. Me and my cousins used to play fight. Jeff Hardy.
I was John Morrison.
Yeah.
Huge Rey Mysterio guy. That's all
I was. Eddie Guerrero. I was Eddie Guerrero, too.
Hey, that's even there you go.
And, I mean, not to get too ahead of ourselves here, but I could also see them really thinking of the future here, and if they buy the WWE, they now have the UFC. What's to come for maybe them combining the two into a streaming service and just having overall streaming company? I mean, you could really see some big business moves coming.
Yeah.
Like I said, financially, I think it's amazing. I just have a little concerns over mixing the two departments, but other than that, you know, I'm not complaining.
You take the good with the bad.
Yeah, exactly. And UFC already does have their streaming service, UFC TV. But it would be interesting to see when they pull their resources together and see, because, I mean, I have a lot of problems with UFC TV. That's a whole other conversation.
And, I mean, WWE's on, like, Peacock.
Exactly,
all the time.
Which
it's
is like, yeah.
I could see them merging the two, but, hey, that's the future. We'll talk about that later.
Yeah, no, definitely. But I think it is important, though, that you mentioned that whole, you know, getting shoved down your throats with Power Slap, we also saw recently.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people were pushed back against that. Totally, because they felt like it was different than UFC.
Exactly.
And that was actually something that was really connected to the UFC. So it's interesting to think about. But with that being said, I think that'll do it for this installment of Pound for Pound. Make sure to tune into UFC 287 this Saturday and our recap episode next week, breaking down all the results. Before we go, I want to give a massive shout out to my co-hosts Riley and Madi, our producer Brian Raybacks on the sticks, and of course, our sports director here at WFUV, Bobby C. I'm Andrew Carneri, and Pound for Pound is a production of WFUV Sports.